Welcome to the Mint Budget Podcast Series. I'm Nandita Mathur, and in this podcast series, we discuss various aspects of the budget. In the first podcast, we have with us senior Mint editors and experts who share their views on the budget, look at some politically crucial budget over the years, and analyze political and economic issues related to it. Welcome to Sukumar, Monica, and Anil.
I'm Monica Hallan. I edit the Mint Money pages for Mint.
Hi, I'm Sukumar. I'm the editor of Mint.
Hi, I'm Anil Padmanabhan, the deputy managing editor at Mint.
Sukumar, can you set the discussion rolling by sharing your views on the budget seen as a political tool?
Well, the budget is always a policy instrument. I wouldn't call it a political tool, you know, because I think that in some ways underplays its significance. Over a period of time, it's come to stand for a clear articulation of the government's policies on a variety of issues, including tax, which both corporate as well as individual investors are very worried about, as well as its efforts to focus on certain areas. For instance, in the last budget, you clearly saw an emphasis on startups. You clearly saw an emphasis on improving the ease of doing business in India. So it's not just a financial exercise the way it is in many other countries, but it's much more of a policy instrument. And obviously, because policy influences all our lives and also influences business decisions, it can be said that it is in some ways also a political instrument.
I would say that there's strong politics underlying the budget. Whether you look at, big picture messages like redistribution, which was UPA's claim to fame through NREGA, and of course that infamous loan write-off which they undertook. The same way this NDA brings to the table a very interesting political mix, politics, to the table, particular emphasis on the market-oriented principles, which is a big shift away from the previous regime's approach to governance, more transactional based. I think those are hugely significant, and they have, if you look back over the years, particularly in the last, say, 25, 30 years when reforms have begun, politics of the budget has become very critical.
I would agree with that. It is that one time in a year that the government gives a direction to its basic economic policies. The song and dance around the budget ensures that this message reaches out to the people. So it is definitely a place from which their political agenda, as far as economics is concerned, as far as the business of running the country is concerned, it's a platform which they use to push that out.
Well, the only issue I have is it's like one of these big bangs, right? I mean, the budget happens. Everyone comments about it, everyone writes about it, everyone notices it. And then over a period of time, it recedes to one forgotten corner of our memory. No one really understands what is happening. And it takes a long time for things that are said in the budget to actually happen in reality. For instance, the startup fund, which the government announced a few months back, was actually announced in the budget. And was it announced in the last budget or the previous budget? I think it was announced in the budget, the first budget that he presented.
No, I think it's the second budget.
One of the two budgets. Again, I find it very difficult to distinguish between one budget and the other. And I think one of the reasons for that is the fact that it all seems to coalesce into one very forgettable whole over a period of time. But I would agree with Anil that to us, it's one opportunity we have of understanding how this government is thinking, right? Thinking in terms of its politics, thinking in terms of its economic philosophy. And that's very important because it's not a very communicative government. So for us, it's another opportunity to understand how they think.
Sukumar, the other thing here at this stage we need to, which we don't generally for various logistic reasons, is not look at the state budgets, and which is actually since the 14th Finance Commission report came and the big transfer to states, they have withdrawn grants. So states are very much charting their own fiscal fortunes or economic fortunes. Unfortunately, most of these state budgets are in regional languages very often, so they kind of, and access issues do emerge. But we as a newspaper and in the media, we tend to, have always tended to ignore state budgets unless we have state bureaus there, which I think is...
Has to change.
Exactly.
It has to change. I agree completely.
Coming to the next question, can budgets help you win or lose elections, especially in a country like India, or is this just a myth?
I would say budgets don't win and lose you elections, but what you do in the budgets particularly what Sukumar said, carry through with whatever you promise eventually determines. Like a lot of, overemphasis on the loan write-off being the singular cause that the UPA won a second term. It was not just that. I think you have to look at, in politics, you have to look at it everything holistically. There was no opposition at that point of time. Now, reverse the situation, people can say they did a lot of populist things in the eventual budget that UPA presented. But did it win them an election? No, because you had a very vibrant opposition which took the battle to them and won. So to me, I would prefer not to look at it in silos.
I don't agree that a budget has anything to do with the election. The Indian election is such a complicated, such a layered exercise, and the way that the Indian voter looks at the world. So the budget is announcement of the government policies, but the way that elections are fought and won are on things which are very touchable by the average person. It could be around issues of prices, about inflation, about onion prices. It could be on issues of freedom. So I think the two are not related in any way.
I would even add local issues. Hmm. I think a great point.
Yeah.
When you said it's multi-layered. Hmm. So there are like the issues in the Northeast would be very different from the issues in the South. Yeah. And then again, regional politics plays a big role. So yeah. I wouldn't say budget.
Yeah, as much as a budget can either help or hurt the economy, I think it has a minor role to play as far as elections are concerned. Because if you look at the last elections, one of the reasons, and there were many reasons why the UPA lost, the first one being the UPA itself, right? I mean, and how they worked. But one of the reasons was also the fact that inflation was a big problem. And it also helped that you had a very vibrant opposition that was able to capitalize on that. Corruption was a big issue, but prices were an issue. And why do prices in India go up? Prices in India simply go up because we don't have capacity, right? It's what economists call supply-side issues. So if the economy grows fast, at some point in time, it gets overheated and prices go up. And the budget is a good opportunity to address some of those supply-side issues, which the UPA never did. You know, the structural issues have remained largely unaddressed for a long time. So to that extent, I would think that the budget probably influences the environment, the overall environment. Like a great budget could encourage foreign investment, could in turn cascade down into jobs, do all those kind of things. If there are tax breaks in the budget, for instance, I mean, it could create a feel-good environment, could increase consumption, could generally make people feel a little better. So purely from that perspective, I think it's one of the influencing factors. But, you know, I don't think it can win or lose an election for anyone.
It is the whole statement and the action. With the previous government, there was a statement, but nobody ever saw anything on the ground in terms of the policy paralysis. So I think, again, you can make the statements that you want to make in the budget, but the voter is not a silly person in India. He's a very smart person. So they can see the difference between a budget statement and the complete lack of implementation. And that is what will win or lose the election.
That's true.
Moving on, one common theme which we've seen around budgets is related to taxation and the expectations of the middle class from the budget. Monica, what do you feel about this?
So if you look at a lot of the anticipation of the average middle class people around the budget, it has to do with the taxation rates. So they will talk to the finance minister talking of how they should get better deductions and lower rates. And at the risk of opening myself up to a lot of criticism, there's an exaggerated sense of the own importance of the Indian taxpayer as to how important we are for the national budget. But Anil, you can back me up on this. What is the percentage of direct personal income taxes in the entire revenue?
8 to 9%,
okay. Of the entire revenue of the government in a year, 8 to 9% comes from the direct personal income taxes. So yes, it is important for the government for revenue, but not that important. And having said that, ability of the government to tinker with the rates and the slabs is now over. So the big change happened with VP Singh and then Manmohan Singh and then finally Chidambaram in financial year 98, when the three slab 10, 20, 30 was sort of cast in stone. No finance minister since then has tinkered with this 10, 20, 30 slab rate.
And they're unlikely to, right?
It doesn't make sense to change that at all. So those are sort of cast in stone. Then you can tinker a little bit on the exemptions, the deductions. But as far as the Indian taxpayer is concerned, I think we just need to live with these three. slabs.
The middle class, the way it looks forward to budgets has to be revisited.
Yes, the middle class is also looking for this whole, we become number junkies to a certain extent. I mean, how does it matter what the repo rate is going to be? But there is this whole, you know, build up to the repo rate for the average.
What EMIs, they're a big factor.
Finally, look at the transmission, Anil.
The difference is actually very marginal.
Yeah. I would...
Flip logic is, to flip the logic, it's also the same reason why people like to buy stuff on EMI. Right? Because monthly outgo is not much.
You will need like 200
bits. But if you look at an average middle class home today, I don't think they've ever lived in so much debt. Because Indians generally abhor debt. They like zero. So they've got student loans.
Bad?
They have personal, their consumer loans. No, I'm saying their vulnerability to EMIs. So I'm not saying debt is bad. Of course, debt is good.
But the kind of debt that a lot of people are living on is really the credit card debt. So a home loan is a good loan because you have finally an appreciating asset.
You have student loans.
You have student,
consumer good loans.
Yes.
I mean, like Sukumar says, there's companies incentivize you to go on EMI. Your credit card company incentivizes to go on EMI. So the EMI ethos is very much part of our, middle class living.
Yeah, it's part of this whole consumption thing that's happened, right? And I think it's a good thing. Mm. But I do buy your point on credit card loans. I mean, especially from the chair in which you sit, which is, personal finance editor. Mm. And it is a bad thing because the rates on those are horrible, right?
I mean, 24-36%.
By the way, the biggest growing segment of bank loans is consumer loans. It's growing at 20-22% at this point of time. Kind of tells you there is a EMI market right out there.
And that consumption thing seems to be, it's still strong, at least in reasonably strong in urban areas. I mean, it's not as if...
severely squeezed in rural India because of rural distress.
Exactly, rural distress has squeezed it. And I think much more important than what happens actually to tax rates, I think what people are really looking for in this budget is some sort of message from this government, right? Because we've got very mixed messages. In some ways, Modi's gone out and he's done a great job in selling India to the world. I think it's very creditable that India now actually sits at the high table in various fora. But I think within the country, there's a sense of lack of direction.
Even outside Sukumar, I don't think they've done a clean break with the legacy they inherited, particularly retrospective taxation. The issue of Vodafone, all these are very much alive. And that concerns. I mean, there is a certain uncertainty, precisely what you're saying. But you have not...
You've
not
done
intent,
it. Correct. The transmission has not happened. And that, I think, is worrying, right? Because especially for foreign investors, the tax issue is like it's a big bugbear. And if you look at how last year, when they announced this alternative tax, which could possibly affect foreign portfolio investors, and then all the foreign portfolio investors protested, and then they appointed a committee and they went back and they repealed it, they can do the same thing with retrospective tax if they want to, but it's just that they've not done that. So I think that sense of certitude about tax is probably something that people would like to see. It's what you said. It's a very articulate government in terms of going out there and announcing its intent to not do these things. But then when it comes to the actual act of not doing it, something is lacking.
And also what, for this budget especially, what the market is anticipating right now, and it's not very happy, it's not a happy anticipation, is this whole rumor of the long-term capital gains tax getting bumped from 1 year to 3 years. So all other assets they define long-term as holding an asset for 3 years, except for listed equity on which STT has been paid, which is 365 days. So there is a conversation that they may extend this to 3 years. That is the other thing which is worrying a lot of investors and the markets as well right now.
And that could actually hurt stock investments even more.
I differ. So for me, my world is from the point of view of this retail investor who's not playing markets.
And doing mutual funds.
Is doing, even if you are doing blue chip stocks yourself and you're not in a mutual fund, but my horizon is not 1 year, 3 years. Actually, it's 10 years. For me, as a long-term investor and not a speculator, it doesn't matter to me. But market is run on sentiment by speculators. So if they do bring it in, so I would imagine there'll be a knee-jerk reaction in the market.
A correction in the market.
Yeah, but it'll get back.
How does it work in the rest of the world? How do they define this short term? Is it 365 days? Or?
I don't know about the number of days, but there is no disparity in the different assets like what we have here. I think it's the same thing.
Anil, over the years, you've seen a lot of budgets. If you can share from your memory, which budgets you feel have been more politically crucial?
If I look back, I think there are a bunch of epoch budgets which I would like to flag. One is the VP Singh budget, in which Bimal Jalan detailed the long-term fiscal policy, which was somewhere in the 80s. 86. I don't remember the exact date.
It was 86.
Yeah. And the tragedy of that is that we are yet to articulate a long-term fiscal policy. So, what, 30 years later, we are still debating whether we should have a long-term fiscal policy. Then, of course, the 91 benchmark movement of Manmohan Singh, which changed a lot of things and fundamentally transformed India, accelerated the whole reform momentum. Then I would definitely look at Yashwant Sinha's budget in, I think it was 98 or 99, where he reset the entire interest rate scenario in the country and kicked off the housing boom. In fact, it worked together, which is why I go back to this EMI story, which is what set the middle class dream alive.
And that was in many ways responsible for those good years that we saw, right? Apart from global liquidity, the fact that we saw that growth between 2004 and 2007, it was largely construction and real estate driven.
And I would look at Jaitley's second budget. Yeah, it may have been badly written, badly drafted, must have sounded very bad to our ears. But frankly, it was a moment where this country is it is a reset button that NDA hit on this country. And unfortunately, they are not articulate enough on this, and their message has always been lost. But it is a great benchmark moment where a new India was officially acknowledged, where the market economy was officially acknowledged, and we started burying the ghosts of our socialist legacy.
I think I'm happy you mentioned the Yashwant Sinha budget, because that budget is actually given very little credit for what it actually set off 5-6 years later. Ironically, it's the same sector which is now in the doldrums. And if you can do something to revive the construction sector, you will immediately see the benefits on the economy as a whole, because it's one of those sectors which has got a huge cascading impact, and that's really the one that's got hit.
Finally, if each one of you had a wish to make to the finance minister, what would that be?
Don't make too many changes in the way that the taxes are for the average individual. Don't make any sort of large changes, because it's a good, the base is quite good now, and you can do small tinkerings, but just sort of let it go on the way that it is going.
I'd like him to keep it short. The previous budget was very long, and it had far too many things. I'd like him to keep it short, and I'd actually like him to go out on a limb and say things that everyone wants to hear him say about tax. If it's necessary to repeal something, go ahead and repeal it. It's time you did it. Instead of merely articulating an intent to do so. You know, the unfortunate thing is in India, no one likes to criticize the budget other than people like us. So if you speak to even foreign investors as well as domestic investors, all of them say good things about the budget. They will never say that it should have done it. But if you speak to them in private, tax is a big sticking point with a lot of foreign investors. So he should go out and just repeal all these irritating things that are there. I don't know whether he'll do it, because it requires a certain degree of intellectual courage to go out and do it, and also political courage to go out and do it.
I would definitely emphasize a short budget, purely because in the media, I mean, it gives us a lot of time. I'm glad they've advanced the time to noon, and as opposed to the previous 5 o'clock exercise that we used to have. But the messaging has to be very clear, whatever the message is. It cannot be this garbled form. So particularly if you have a long speech, it tends to get garbled, you lose your message. And I would definitely hope that they reset this narrative, which is of this country at this point of time. This polity is only about hate and religion. And I would really hope this budget puts economics back on the national agenda.
Yeah, after all, they came to power on that platform. And we haven't heard too much of it in recent days.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I mean, because in terms of structural change, I don't think any government has achieved what they have done in 18 months, you look at anything you want, you know, direct benefit transfer, follow through, you know, and implement. These are all talked about previously. DBT, whether you look at this whole financial inclusion.
Yeah. Or the road sector,
yeah. Road
right, where a lot of projects have actually been revived.
And you see, there are a lot of things coming together, which we often ignore in this very inflammatory narrative that we are preoccupied with this right now. You had this NFHS data, which tells you how our health makeup of this country is so vastly improved. Malnutrition in states like Madhya Pradesh have fallen by something like 20-25 percentage basis points, you know, which is huge in such a short span. Then the census data showed us materially India has traded up. So we are in a perfect sweet spot. You know, you're the only point growing in the world. So this is it. I mean, this budget has a lot riding on it, and I hope the finance minister recognizes that.
Thank you all for this wonderfully engaging discussion. Stay tuned for the next budget podcast.